The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Yeah, we got a few more minutes. Thanks. Helps with my distractibility.
And I'll be giving you the traditional 5 minute and 2 minute warning, you know, whatever. Just give a little quick direction.
Yeah, I'll be watching that one too.
Rather go with their officials than mine.
Yeah, because that's the one they're watching.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the Anger, Dealing with Anger session here with Dr. Dan Green. He is the clinical director of New Life Resources, as well as he has taught here numerous times through the seminary and various other places. It's my honor to introduce you Dr. Dan Green.
Thank you. Well, good morning. I want to begin by apologizing to those of you who showed up this morning. There was a miscommunication. You may have noticed I wasn't there. That was not intended to be an anger induction seminar, so I apologize for that. That's not going to happen again. But this is a seminar on addressing our anger, but I'm going to be focusing on resolving our anger. And this is a hot topic. Yes, when we're feeling angry, we often feel hot, but it's also quite controversial. What do we do with it? When you hear the word anger, what does that evoke in you? What's stirred in you when you hear the word anger?
Violence.
Negative.
Yelling.
Hurt.
High blood pressure.
Uncontrollability.
Not getting what I want. Frustration.
This is getting kind of dark. Yeah. When you feel angry, what do you notice in your body?
Heart rate's up.
Tense.
It's all about me.
Ready for action. Yeah, we're energized.
Defensive.
What do you feel when you see anger expressed in somebody that you're around? What does that evoke in you?
Contempt?
Get out of the way?
Defensiveness?
Frustration?
Fear.
Controls your thinking? Oh, it'll dominate the experience, won't it?
Yeah. Not very pleasant, is it?
When we think about anger, I'd like you to think back when you were growing up, when you were learning about how to navigate this world, what did you learn about anger? And as you consider that, think about the world you grew up in. How was anger expressed? How did you know if the big people in your life were angry? Some yelled, threw things. Eye contact. Anybody familiar with the look? Yeah, a couple of us. Okay. Who got to be angry in that world?
The big people.
Sometimes it's only one of the big people, depending on the situation. Who couldn't be angry?
Yeah,
sometimes it was me. Everybody else. What indicated that the anger's over? How did you know when it was resolved? Everything was broken. Kind of spin our wad there. There's nothing left. Okay. They left the room.
Countenance went down.
Silence. Heard that a couple of times. Silence. The conclusion was pretty ambiguous here. It's difficult to know when it's over. I'd like to take a look today at this phenomenon called anger that so far we've identified as a pretty unpleasant and often associated with pretty destructive human potential. I'd like to take a look at how it's manifest, the different ways that it presents, understandings about it. And what I want to use, and when we wrap up our time today, is take a look at a strategy for having resolution so that we know when it's over and so that we can manage our anger. We can be good stewards of the life God's given us so that we can manage our anger in a way that is God-honoring. And I do believe that that's what we're called to do, and I do believe that's doable. But as we explore what anger looks like, let me describe to you four presentations. And I'd like you to think about your own story, where I've known individuals that have presented this way, and how do I fit into these different types of anger presentation. The first guy I'm thinking of is Fred. Fred's explosive. Fred is expressive. He wears his feelings on his sleeve, and sometimes his sleeve propels things across the room. His words come out quick and sharp and cutting. Fred will take a person down quickly. When he is upset about something, everybody knows it, and he will do whatever it takes for him to have his way. Fred dominates the world he lives in. It's all about Fred. And you don't want to rock Fred's boat because his boat is an aircraft carrier and he sends out the planes.
It is vicious sometimes. Now, when he's confronted, he'll say, hey, I was angry. Why do you take it so serious? When he's confronted with the words he used, oh, I was just angry. He blows it off. Fred doesn't take any responsibility for what he does when he's angry. For him, anger equals a get-out-of-jail-free card. I'm not responsible when I'm angry. That's just how I am. I've always been this way. Many of us know of Fred. Next guy I'm thinking of is Bill. Now, Bill doesn't show anger. He's a pretty nice guy. He shows hurt. He shows disappointment. He shows that he's wounded. He's a sensitive guy. So when something's troubling him, when something is wrong, he is hurt and he pulls away. He feels sad and down and he sulks and he mopes. Nothing changes for him. He comes into a room and yet he's all alone. For him, the anger is hidden. What he shows when there's anger is sadness or hurt or maybe disgust. But you never know where you stand with him. With Bill, you get these emotions that as you try to explore them, there's like nothing behind it. And he's just sad. Well, third guy. George uses anger in a very passive-aggressive way. His middle name could be Resistance. George is passive-aggressive in his response to anger. Always late. People around him, family members, upset that he's always late, and he'll say, everybody be on time, be on time. And then he comes 6 minutes later, and they're waiting for him. And he goes, oh, come on, just let's everybody, good mood, let's go. It's their fault that they're tense because they've been waiting those 6 minutes, the way he set this up. Sometimes he will be very intentional, and he knows that one of the family members was planning on something, and they didn't know about a detail. And he doesn't tell them that detail. And when something goes wrong, it's sort of like, I didn't know what to do with that information. And the other person is hurt. When you would talk with George, he's not an angry person. He's not doesn't have unresolved anger. But he is a sabotager. Sometimes seemingly on little things, just resisting, not cooperating. Sometimes he intentionally sets people up to fail. George has passive-aggressive tendencies. Now the fourth guy, Steve. Steve is an avoider. Steve is a peacemaker. He's another nice guy. Now, he wants everybody to get along. He enjoys the social relationships of his family and friends. And when problems arise, he has only one request. Can this just go away? Can this not happen? Can we all be okay with each other? Now, on the one hand, he's very pleasant to be with, and people enjoy him. He's a friendly guy. But he's described as milquetoast. And his wife says he doesn't care about anything. He's pretty indifferent about life. Now, if you talk to him, he's not indifferent. But he acts like nothing matters to him. And when a hard decision has to be made, he steps back to see what's going to happen. Because he doesn't want to upset. He doesn't want to cause any distress or conflict. He struggles with feeling helpless. He struggles with feeling out of control. Each of these guys, in fact, has the experience at times of feeling out of control. And they are using the strategies that I just described, the explosive, the secondary emotion approach, the passive-aggressive approach, or the avoidant approach. They're using these approaches to try to have a sense of being in control, to have self-management. And none of these strategies work. All of them are going to bring damage. As we consider this phenomena of anger and how it fits into our lives, I'd like us to differentiate a couple of factors. One is we could talk about our experience of anger. So Fred, he experiences anger as red hot. And it's like a toggle switch, on and off. Now, Bill experiences it as sadness or hurt. He doesn't have the experience of being angry. In fact, if you ask him, are you angry? His answer would be, no, I'm not an angry person. Those signals are completely lost on him. It's like his dashboard. Speedometer's broken. He doesn't move. Doesn't see any evidence. George, he will experience some anger, but very quickly he moves into action. It might be action of resistance, action of sabotage, but he doesn't allow himself to recognize what he's angry about. As soon as he feels that inner signal of anger, he takes some kind of action. And then we've got Steve, who's terrified to feel anger. And he may feel it, but he has a lot of shame with it, a lot of fear with it. And he does all he can to avoid it. The inner experience is very different in these ways of coping. Now, why do we have this inner experience? Well, I used him a moment ago, the idea of a dashboard, that we have signals on our dash that tell us what's going on inside our car as well as what's going on between our car and the road. Internally as well as externally, what's happening, how fast we're going, how fast our engine's going, what the temperature for our engine is our oil pressure still within specs, etc. In a similar way, the emotional element, the feeling state, the internal subjective experience is like our dashboard. If I ignore it, that doesn't mean it's gone away. That means I'm unaware. Had a friend who thought it was really, really ridiculous that after all the money he spent on this new car that he had to have oil changes. He thought that was a complete waste of money. And based on that belief, he decided to take this beautiful new car and he wasn't going to change the oil in it. And you know, that worked for a while. About 45,000 miles that worked. And he was ignoring the yellow lights and then the red lights on his dash. And then one day he was late for work. And why was he late for work? Because his engine seized on the interstate. And nothing happened after that with that. So he goes to the dealer and he's complaining. You make a good car. This should not happen. It's under warranty. I want a new engine. And they said, did you maintain it? No. It's not under warranty anymore. You abused, you mistreated the machine, and it did what it will predictably do. Oh, was he mad. But his anger didn't change anything. And he had to buy a new engine, which was about the price of a new car, he found out. I can ignore the signals, and I can want it to be a certain way, but what is, is. Reality is reality. We will do well to learn to use the signals in our decision-making process. So we've got the experience of anger, but we also then have anger behaviors. When I feel anger, that is not a determinant of what happens next. My experience of anger does not lead directly to me doing anything. We've got four different guys here, and Fred and Steve act radically different with the same experience. We can behave differently when we notice the signal. And we'll get more on that coming up in a few moments. We also need to recognize that our behavior has consequences. So we could talk about anger consequences. A lot of what we thought about as we were sharing, when you hear the word anger, what do you think of? We were thinking of the consequences. Things flying, words yelled, insults shot at us. the behaviors and then how it affects those around or even the one doing the anger. So as we sort this out, internal signals, behaviors, consequences. We want to keep that in mind. Now, as we consider these phenomena, there are three different ways people have approached anger in a very general sense. One is many people have concluded anger is bad and should not occur. And boy, there's a lot of reasons to identify anger is bad and should not occur, like the things that are said, the way people are treated, things flying, the pain of it. It's true that our anger can do great damage. It's true that in our anger, we can hurt ourselves, we can hurt others, we can cut ourselves off from others, we can cut ourselves off from God. Galatians 5, 19 to 21, the acts of the flesh are obvious, sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissension, factions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. These kind of behavior patterns, this way of living, is not of God. This is the old man. This is the old self. This is to be put off. When we think only of anger as the consequences that are so damaging, we can identify these are out of bounds. Good does not come from this. But just like if I ignore my dashboard, I get in trouble. If I take Steve's approach and try to ignore my anger, I equally get in trouble. See, in the world as it was designed to be, how it ought to be, prior to sin, we've got this beautiful, beautiful passage. They were naked and not ashamed. Nothing to hide. No secrets, no jealousy, no unmet needs. Things were just good. And that is how we're designed to live. But we know that with the advent of sin, things changed. Now we face problems. Now wrong things occur. Now we have tendencies within us that are destructive. We have forces around us that are destructive. We are taken advantage of. We are abused. We are mistreated. It's not the way it ought to be. We're going to need a mechanism. We're going to need a tool to address that what is wrong around us. We need to be able to identify and take action when we confront something that's wrong. Let me ask you this. What does God get angry at? Sin. That's the good summary. So we can break that down in things like unrighteousness, selfishness, lack of love, violence, injustice. God is angry at sin. When he perceives, when he recognizes something's wrong, he is angry. His wrath is a part of his holiness. He doesn't tolerate. He doesn't put up with. He's not in the presence of that which is not love. We are made in his image. We have a similar response. However, we are also influenced by living in this fallen world, sin. Our response is quite imperfect. We're going to see that we respond to anger when we perceive something's wrong. We need anger in a fallen world, but we need to manage it in a way that is godly. We need to be responsible for the consequences. We're going to need to be mindful of the behaviors, the way in which we manage it. So there's a second approach that kind of swings to the other end of the continuum. And in this approach, anger is morally neutral, and we just need to express ourselves. Fred's all for this. He likes expression. He doesn't want to be chained down by anything. For him to be free is to
be able to express anything and everything. However, he leaves a path of destruction in his wake. He has broken relationships. He's isolated. He's feared. He's in trouble all the time. And he doesn't understand why nobody likes him, which creates anger for him. You can see the cycle. This perspective that all I need to do is to express my anger and get it out is very popular, was especially popular late 60s through about the 80s, where we had all these efforts to express ourselves. And I already identified watching the dashboard is a good thing. What happens if I only watch the dashboard? I just ran over two people before I hit the car in front of me. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to. Well, there are consequences for only watching the dashboard. The research is very clear on this. When we express anger, and that's all we do, we experience more anger. When we just express our anger, we experience magnification of the intensity of the anger. If all I do is express my anger, I feel more angry, my behavior becomes more extreme. Which prompts me, I need to express more of it now. I got to get this out of me. Well, trying to get it out of me, I'm creating it. And some of us might say, yeah, I've had that experience. I'm just so angry and I just, grow. Well, temporarily, I might feel energy reduction because I expended a tremendous amount of energy and I got to catch my breath. However, I have not resolved anything. I have only created more problems as a result of that last expression. Is anger morally neutral? Well, I've already identified the expression of it is not going to lead to resolution. In fact, the expression by itself is going to make it more intense. Is it wrong to express anger? That's kind of a trick question. Is it wrong to express happiness? No. Can we sin in our happiness? Yeah, I can think of some ways. Yeah. We can sin in happiness. We can sin in sadness. We're kind of equal opportunity sinners. We can sin in any emotional state. The signal isn't our problem. The anger signal that I'm getting, that's not morally neutral. See, that's not, in and of itself, the problem. The problem is going to be what is done with that signal. My behavior and the responsibility for the consequences. Now, my behavior also talks about what goes on inside me. There are behaviors that I can see, but there's also activity going on inside me. One of the ways that many of us like to manage our anger is let it be our secret, thinking, at least I'm not, fill in the blank. But what happens to us? What is the consequence to us when I entertain my anger inside, and I think about how that person wronged me, and I rehearse what they did to me and how wrong that was. What's the consequence to me? It's a bubbling. Stuff's happening inside of me, and I fool myself to think I keep that inside. That's just me pretending. The reality is, it's going to come out. It's going to come out, though, in a way that now I don't even know how to predict, let alone will I be able to manage it when it happens. So anger is a reality that we face because we live in a fallen world. We recognize things that are wrong, and when we recognize things that are wrong, we physically react with this emotion that we call anger. But it's not morally neutral. I'd like us to consider right now the passage found in Ephesians 4. It's a rather lengthy passage. I'm going to take just a moment to read it to you. And as I read it, I'd like you to be differentiating between old life, new life. I'd like you to be differentiating between natural reaction, old life, how we can be the new life. That, however, is not the way of life you learned when you heard about Christ and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. And do not give the devil a foothold. Anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. What a contrast. Now, many people are aware of that passage. In your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Okay, in your anger, do not sin, implying, well, maybe I could have anger and not sin. That appears to be the implication. The second part, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Oh, man, it's really rough in December. I got to get that anger taken care of in only a couple of hours. Summer's much better. I got the whole day up to about 8:30, 9:30 to take care of it. That's not quite the point here. Our old way of living, the self, the flesh, what I want is my criterion. I got the most incredible 2-year-old grandson. Pictures later, I'll do it right now. This little guy is fascinating, amazing. I don't remember my kids being nearly this cool. I don't know how this happened. And he is completely, entirely selfish. And it's the only way a little guy can be. You know, Paul writes in the love chapter that when I was a child, I functioned like a child. As I mature, I grow, and now think I process like an adult, like a man. Putting off the old self, growing in Christ, is going to be putting off that selfishness, that me only, that is our natural inclination, not because we're particularly especially bad, but because we're one of us. This is what the human condition is. As we look at what the new life looks like, speak truthfully. Do not sin in our anger. Don't let the sun go down. Or, to summarize, deal with it. Address it. Don't avoid. Take care of the problem, whatever that might be. Why? This idea of give the devil a foothold. Well, when I get out of control of me, it's like I hand the remote control over to whoever's there and who might be there. Give up stealing. Seems reasonable. But it's more than that. Don't just give up. Work with your hands. Give to those in need. Do good. As we go through this list, we see that the old self, the immature self, is self-focused. We are to be now love-motivated, going towards what is good. Kind and compassionate to one another, forgive each other just as Christ forgave you, forgave me. So we are to be motivated by what is good, going towards what is good for others, living in the freedom to be clean. That those things that are wrong, that our anger is elicited by, that comes forth when we notice, they are to be dealt with. Now, many here avoid the responsibility of dealing with it. They are looking for somebody else to fix it. They are looking for circumstances to change. They are looking for them to get their own way by overpowering others.
In your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Paul here is addressing the one with the anger. We are responsible for how we manage. Many, many of the Proverbs address this very reality, that we are responsible for how we manage our anger. So in order to manage it, we're going to have to be aware of it. In order to manage it, we're going to have to recognize its purpose. And this is what I want to talk about now. Strategies, very practically, how do I do this? If our anger is the reality of living in a fallen world, we recognize things that are wrong, things that need to change. How does my anger fit into this? Well, first of all, accept responsibility for my anger. Here's a phrase that is not based in reality. You make me angry. I bet I could get an argument on this one. I know I could get an argument on this one from many, many people. It's as if many of us live that our buttons for control are on the outside and other people can just come up and, you know, like a vending machine, A5, I get anger from them. We're not machines. We're image bearers, made in God's image, human beings given this life to care for and manage. We can do this for God's glory. So, I am responsible for my management of my anger. It's mine. I feel angry when you fill in the blank. That might be an accurate description of what's happening. But it's my anger, it's my response, and it's fully my responsibility. See, if I don't accept this point, I have lost human dignity. If I don't own full responsibility for how I manage my anger, I'm less than a person. And frankly, I expect my dog to manage my dog's anger. I expect my dog to have self-control. If I might be less than a human, no, I'm less than a dog. This is getting really bad. To take responsibility for my anger, it's very helpful to consider a criteria for, well, how do I sort out what I am responsible for? I like to use this definition, and those of you who've heard me before are probably familiar with this. I just find this so helpful, I want to repeat it. I am responsible for how I take care of myself, how I treat myself, how I treat others. I am responsible for how I treat myself, treat others. Human dignity, self-control, this is mine. I am not responsible for how other people treat me. I am not responsible for how other people treat other people. I'm not responsible for how other people treat themselves. This is my freedom. Now, I have influence at times. I can influence my children or I have influence on my wife. I'm kind to her. It's really nice how that often works out. But I don't have control. And I don't have responsibility for her. She's a separate, unique person. When I differentiate the responsibility, a huge burden is lifted off me. And when that burden comes off, for many men, anger already is being greatly reduced. We may see what I perceive that's wrong is something I can't control. And when I recognize, true, I can't control it, nor ought I be able to control it. Whew, what a relief. That's good news. So for some of us, we need to look at this criteria, and I need to let go of things that I have taken on myself. For others, I need to take on responsibility for what I've neglected. Or in both cases, for many of us, it's both. I need to sort it out, let go what's not mine, take on what is mine. When I take responsibility for myself, now the signals that I'm getting, that anger feeling inside, is now a tool for me to use instead of a threat to me or something that I have to fight. This is my anger. I'm feeling the anger. Well, what I want to do is the same thing I do when I look at a speedometer. How intense is it?
if I'm in a neighborhood and I look down and I say, how intense is my speed? 75. Probably doesn't fit this scenario very well. 25, yeah, I'm probably about 50 over. I ought to slow down here. In a similar way, when I recognize my anger is mine, I look at my anger speedometer and I see that I'm 75, I need to address the intensity. Sometimes what I need to do is de-escalate. Well, how do I slow down on the car? I can take my foot off the gas. I can put my foot on the brake. Well, how do I slow down my body? I can take the foot off the gas. I can stop rehearsing what happened to me. This is not new information. Got it figured out. It's the same story over and over again. That's gas. Put the foot on the brake. I can say, okay, what am I going to do about it? And that's what we're going to go into now. I manage me. I recognize my intensity. It's often helpful to do this like on a 10-point scale, or one guy I know had a 100-point scale and he tried to find 100 words for every level of that scale. Maybe a little obsessive. But in his own scale, he became more and more sensitive to what the anger was telling him. When I identify that I'm angry and I recognize how intense it is, what is the story about this? I'm angry at, fill in the blank. For point of our example, I'm going to use road rage. Something happened to me quite some time ago, but I think it illustrates it well. Here's the story. I'm driving along the interstate, and a guy cuts me off. And I switch lanes, and he speeds up, gets in front of me, turns around, makes various hand gestures, you can imagine, and then slows down. So I change lanes, and he cuts right over right when I'm changing. Driving back from Madison, I realize I got a little while of this yet. Yikes. So I sped up, and he sped up. I'm not liking this at all. I'm feeling angry. Okay, that's the story so far. The next thing I do when I look at the story, I ask myself, what's wrong? Remember, anger is the signal I have when I perceive something's wrong. So in that story I just gave you, what's wrong? Well, one thing was I was starting to be very reactive to him. I was allowing him to influence my competition. What else is wrong in this story? There's several. Unsafe driving. He literally is putting me and others at risk for harm by the way he's driving. Anything else wrong? He's at least impinging on my freedom. Okay. Yeah. Insulting. Hand gestures that were less than kind. I'm losing control, feeling controlled. Lots of things wrong in this story. Now, if I try to overpower him, you know, I could ram him, my car was bigger, that leaves a lot of bad consequences. Yeah, that's not going to do it. So at this point, I need to ask myself, I've defined what's wrong. Now I need to decide, is this a preference issue or is this a moral transgression? And here's why, guys. When we try to accept the unacceptable, it doesn't work. Steve tries to accept everything, and he's thought of as milquetoast. He stands for nothing. His wife doesn't even think that Steve loves her. When we stand for nothing, anger goes inside. It goes deep. It goes into bitterness. And, you know, bitterness is kind of like the sauerkraut of emotions. It's just sort of set in there and left to rot. Anger requires we address the problem. So if it's a preference issue, I need to change my expectations. But if it's a transgression, if it's a sinful activity, if it's a wrong, it's not going to be acceptable. I need to take other action that eventually is going to also include, I'm going to need to forgive. You know, if there's somebody in here wearing a Chicago Bears shirt, I would need to accept that. But if somebody comes up and takes off my shirt while I'm trying to speak to you, that is something that's going to go beyond. And that theft would be something that I would not be accepting of. That would be something that would need forgiveness. So in this story, unloving actions. That's not acceptable. Putting someone else's life at risk, that's not acceptable. There is wrongdoing here. This is not an appropriate way to treat another. So I need to take action. What I chose to do is while he was doing this, I realized how angry I was getting, and I realized I needed to take action for the only person that I could manage, me. Stop messing with him. There were two semis with a little space between them, and I'm driving along, and I got right between them. I was no longer fun to play with. He came up right next to me, looked at me, gave me several gestures, and after a little while, he took off. And I got his license plate number. This was the days before cell phones, unfortunately. And when I got to my office, I called and reported that what had happened. This is dangerous. I addressed the wrong that was happening and tried to reestablish a sense of safety in the community. I also recognized I was pretty worked up, and I needed to forgive him. Now, I didn't know who he was. I only knew his car and general description of him and his license plate number. But looking at Romans 12, I wanted to live at peace with him. I put him in the Lord's hand. And I had a time of prayer. I hand this over to you. I'm letting go of this now. I forgive him. It's over for me. And my anger was over. All that happened in a relatively short period of time. See, when I identified what was wrong, and I determined whether it was a preference or a wrongdoing, I then had to decide what is my action going to be. Anger focuses our attention. Anger energizes us. And that focus and that energy stays with us until we correct something. Do you know what I wanted to correct in that story? Him. How effective would I be at that? Zero. Very often, we use our anger trying to correct another person, trying to fix somebody else to be who we want them to be, trying to recreate them in our own image. That doesn't work, ever. The one life that God has given me to manage is mine. And so my anger is to help me address what I perceive as wrong in my life. But I stay angry even when I have a plan of what needs to change. Let's say I get back to my office and I think, man, I should call the police on that guy. Man, I should forgive him after what he did for me. And let me tell you again what he did to me. If I know what to do and I don't do it, well, James says that is sin. What happens when I know what to do with my anger but I don't do it? My anger turns into bitterness. It rots. It eats away at me. It comes out sideways. Anger requires me to take action, and I stay angry until that action I have taken. Now, let me give you a silly example, though, to make a point on a preference issue. Let's say that I was angry that some of you are wearing eyeglasses. You may take a look at me and say, Dan, have you seen a mirror? Well, you know, many times we are angry at other people regarding features of ourself. Don't you hate that? So let's imagine for a moment. I'm not, by the way, but just for point of illustration. I'm angry that some of you are wearing eyeglasses. So here's the story. Eyeglasses are something that I don't like. I think they're inappropriate. I get angry at them. Preference, moral issue. Help me with this one. Now, why would you say that's a preference? Opinion, choice. What scripture can I appeal to? Thou shalt. There's nothing going to come up with this one. There's no social norm. There's no law. This is my preference. This is how I'd like it to be. The world according to Dan. Okay. What do I do with this preference? Well, what I'd like to do in this silly example, everybody take off your eyeglasses and don't let me see them. And then I'll be happy. Well, I think I will. Let's find out. You're right. It won't work. An inclination is to try to control everyone out there to fit my preference. This is destined for failure. This will not work. But I'm angry, and I am told, in my anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down. Someone can say, well, your anger is sinful because it's so selfish. You want everybody to be just the way you want them to be. And I might go, so? Yeah. What's going to need to change to resolve this anger? Me? Why do I have to change? Why is it always me that has to change? I might be angry at this. Yeah, I've only been given this life to manage. I can only control me. So in this silly example, I have to face a truth that I am resistant to face. I have to face the truth that reality isn't the way I want it. Some of us have noticed that. It isn't the way I want it. And in this, I need to change my expectation. I need to change what I expect, what I demand. And that sometimes even involves grief. I need to let go of how I wanted it to be. But it's only when I make that change can I now release the anger and live well. Many times I find that men that are angry and stuck are fighting against a reality that they won't let go of. It's a preference. It's not how it ought to be. Sometimes we need to do forgiveness work. Sometimes we need to do a change of our expectations. Well, to conclude here, God has entrusted us with this life. He's entrusted us. He's given to us the capacity to have influence, to monitor, to sense. But with that, we can do great damage, we can do great good. I just want to invite you into this adventure of managing, taking the responsibility, owning, managing this life God's given us, and seeing how anger can be godly as a tool to bring good. So thanks for letting me share those observations with you. I think we have time for one question maybe, one or two questions. Yes. Yep.
If we don't allow the Spirit to do it, then it isn't going to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah. So the question is, if we don't let the Spirit do it, will we be able to do this? And what I wanted to communicate in this is that our part of letting the Spirit do this is to be realistic about who we are, to be open to how God has designed us, to be receptive to this. The Spirit is there. Will we be open to it? Will we be receptive? Will we make the modifications so that we can walk as Tony talked to us about an hour or so ago? I'm wanting to really focus on what is our part of that process. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, thank you.